When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi everyone and welcome to Come for Supper. I'm Alexandra Dudley, food writer, cook and serial dinner party host. So I thought it'd be fun to sit down with people who share that love for food, chat about life and learn a little bit more about how they like to serve supper. I speak to chefs, restaurateurs, artists, actors, authors and pretty much anyone who likes to entertain. If you're new to the podcast, make sure you click subscribe. And if you enjoy it, rate it, review it, share it, and tell your friends, as it makes all the difference. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy the show. Good evening, everyone, and thank you all for coming to tonight's Come for Supper Live. It is a podcast, for those of you that don't know, so if you haven't listened to it yet, you can catch up with all the previous episodes on iTunes, Spotify, Acast, and all those podcast places. I'm Alexandra Dudley, for those of you that don't know me, and I love a dinner party. So I thought it'd be fun to sit down with people who I find inspiring and interesting and chat about their life and how they like to serve supper. So tonight we have a very special guest, head chef and proprietor of London's glorious Quo Vadis, just across the road. He was described by the critic Jay Rayner as one of those rare phenomena in the London food world, a chap everyone agrees is a good thing. Partly, that is, because he is sharp, funny, engaged, and the kind of bloke you always want in the room. But mostly, it's because he has such damn good taste. He has lent recipes and whimsically written pieces to the likes of The Guardian, BBC Good Food and The Evening Standard, was a finalist on BBC's Great British Menu and presented the Channel 4 show Could You Eat an Elephant alongside Fergus Henderson. He is the wonderful Jeremy Lee.
Thank you, Dad.
So welcome again.
Thank you for having me and thank you all for coming.
Have you just skipped across the road then on this bleak evening?
Oh, floated.
Floated across the remains
of Hurricane Ciara.
I mean, it's pretty brutal, this hurricane. We've got a lot going on at the moment.
I know, she graciously subsided a little bit today, but I cycled through it this morning and it was quite slow going.
I was going to say, you stayed on your bike then.
Somehow, God knows.
There have been all these things about trampolines ending up in people's gardens and kind of in the middle of the road.
There was a lot of low-flying objects, that's for sure.
And
it was quite a good little challenge.
So let's go back. I know that home was Dundee, Scotland, and your mother was a very good cook. I think she taught domestic science.
She was, indeed. She was a remarkable woman and much missed. Being of an Auckland persuasion these days, which is a grim state of affairs, because I miss them terribly.
I bet.
But she was a very wonderful woman and a brilliant cook. And I didn't even realise how good she was until I started cooking in restaurants. And restaurant cooking and home cooking are wildly different. And particularly back then, when it really was the prawn cocktail years. And it was chocolate eclairs and sucker torts and cream gâteau and tinned mandarins and half a grapefruit with brown sugar on top. You're like, okay, well, this is some interesting, isn't it? You know, but in terms of skills you learned as a cook, it was invaluable, the apprenticeship I learned. And then over time, I was able to start, as I grew older and climbed the greasy pole and came to the kitchens and finally became a head chef. All that, I was able to bring the two together, which is quite remarkable and unusual, I have to say. It's not normal.
When was it that you knew that you wanted to be a chef?
Oh, I never knew I wanted to be a chef.
You never knew?
Well, I think that's the remarkable thing about my generation. There were no plans. A lot of us fell into it by accident because, to give you a vague idea of the respect chefs were held in back then, I had initially took a job as a waiter to earn some money en route to pay my way, en route to becoming an illustrator. and go to art college, following in my grandfather's footsteps, my father's footsteps, my brother's footsteps. And while at college, I took a job as a part-time waiter in a very beautiful, tiny little old mansion house hotel that had opened down the road from where we lived. And such a bad waiter was I, indeed. And going back to the kitchen one night, absolutely covered in red cabbage. just this Lady Macbeth-like massacre going on this pristine white thing. And they went, "Oh, Jeremy." And I went, "I know." And so, amazingly, instead of sacking me for being useless, they put me in the kitchen.
And that was that.
And so I swapped a blood-stained, red cabbage-drenched white jacket for the tall white hat, the big neckerchief and all the floor-length white apron, and started an apprenticeship. And against, you know, well, not against anything, just out of the blue, really, without any plan. And something happened. It struck, and simultaneously it was a time that Rick Stein was starting out in Cornwall, and Simon Hopkinson was starting out in in Wales. You know, and Franco Turiscio was cooking at the Walnut Tree. These extraordinary people were all
changing.
Doing things, and all scattered all around the country. And there was that thing of, you know, a weird middle-class boy going into a kitchen. It was an unusual thing. I mean, normally it was regarded as a dead-end job, but folk, there was an interest in food and folk were engaging then. And there was beginning, that was the very early days, of finding this thing of regional cooking and seasonal cooking and home cooking was beginning to make its presence felt in the restaurant business, which had never happened before. And George Perry Smith had done a lot of that. He was the original acolyte of Elizabeth David cooking at the Hole in the Wall in Bath. But very few others, you know, so it was a remarkable time.
And you excelled, sure.
Well, you're very kind, thank you very much.
I mean, really, how long have you been head chef at Quo Vadis? 8 years, is it 8 years?
This is my eighth year, yeah.
And then 18 years, you were at the Blueprint Cafe.
Indeed.
18.
18, as
a
dear
long
friend.
Long time.
Well, as a dear friend said, what on earth did you do? Life would get less these days, dear. And I was like, God, what am I going to do? But along with many things I inherited from my mother, I inherited infinite patience. You know, and hoping that the hare and the tortoise all comes to those who wait,
etc. No, that's
et
true. I agree with that.
And there is certainly something, and you see it now, there's a ferocious appetite to get ahead very, very quickly. And folk climb the dizzy heights very quickly these days. But sometimes, you know, the light that shines twice as bright lasts half as long. Or, you know, you can vanish very quickly. I mean, it's a very strange business now.
Yeah, but the celeb chef, I think, and the kind of social media.
You know, what we have to endure these days. You know.
So do you think there is a dish that has kind of defined you? Or I guess indeed you defined it.
Well, it would be very nice to think that whatever one puts on a menu is delicious. I mean, that's the whole point of menu writing. And it's what cooks and restaurateurs and chefs are measured by. It's, you know, where's the wit, the charm, the seasonality, you know, is this a wise menu? Is it good? Is it delicious? You know, do you want to eat everything on it? You know, are they deviled for choice? All the many, many aspects of it. And the carte that we write at Quo Vadis, we used to write it every day. And then we found really that, you know, having a mind that never stops whirring, is not the easiest thing for the cooks to follow. We slowed that process down and we change it monthly now so that we can focus on dishes and ingredients as they come in. And then as ingredients become available, we can then work on our dish that then can go off menu, a special as we like to call it, and work that way. And so there are a great many dishes we do that we are very good at. CK will come in. But there is one dish, I suppose, that has by sheer extraordinary luck has become something we do, and then it's a modest little sandwich, rather luxurious, of course being Quo Vadis, but it's something I started doing at the Blueprint Cafe many years ago, and it was a very different, it was a huge big thing affair then. Then we've just honed it down, and it took, and it was the first day we had, it was opening day at Quo Vadis. Well, my starting day. I mean, it's been open since 1926. I'm not going to try and lay myself to that great venerable
age. This Quo Vadis.
I know, current incumbent. And we had a box at the top, because there's lots of boxes all over the menu. And originally it was going to be a truffle sandwich, and because I had eaten such a dish at Michel Rostang when he opened at the Meridian Hotel in Piccadilly, when that had closed, when the Piccadilly Hotel had become the Meridian. And it was amazing. It was, you know, the very apotheosis of elegant simplicity and divine and delicious. But then we found out the price of black truffles, and we went, oh, well, maybe not. And they really were at the height of their peak, and Perigord truffles at that stage, what few there were left in the world. And if there are any black truffles left in the Perigord, it's a miracle, as most of them come from the other side of the Pyrenees or further afield. And we just said, oh, God damn it, you know, what are we going to do? And funnily enough, because it was a madcap, very short period of time we had, it was no great luxury in moving in. It was literally hit the time out running. And we bought some smoked eel from our dear friends at the Dutch Eel Company, and who had taken over from Mr. Beale's Eels, which was the original farm. Yeah. And it's the last eel, specific eel farm left in the country, in Lincolnshire. And this Dutch couple had bought it. So they'd sent something, good luck, you know. So went, why don't we just pop in an eel sandwich and just, you know, fill it in. And it has never been off the menu since.
Yeah, I think of that when I think of you. When I think of smoked eels.
Not very kind.
When I think, but that sandwich, I feel like it definitely is one that you just can't...
And it's remained. And it's remarkable. It's something folk come back to, inevitably gets ordered on a full table just to go... You know.
Have you had any copycats? I was reading about that earlier today, because that does happen. You can't really trademark a dish like that, can you?
The copycat, it's a really strange thing, the copycat. I think one has got to say that, well, it's the highest form of flattery.
Yeah, but it's kind of annoying and rude, no?
Well, you know, it is quite stunning. I mean, you know, so long as you get an homage to it.
Yeah.
You know, which we know, which blessedly with this one we do, you know.
Let's chat about entertaining.
Oh, yes.
I almost feel like I certainly know the answer, but do you like to entertain? He's nodding for
nodding,
everybody listening.
Kind of. That's not gin, I promise. Okay, we can do it Buckingham Palace style and just have nothing in it so it looks like water, but actually, but it is water. No, I love entertaining. I think it is something that all folk who really love the restaurant business do. And like to do well and at home. And cooking for two, ugh, rubbish. Dinner party for six, oh, my idea of hell. I can't do formality. And so I like to get our gang round. And
how big is your gang?
Well, it starts out about 9 or 10, yeah. And then becomes
12 or 20.
Really?
And then just go, 19 or 20?
Yeah, well, it's amazing. The jungle drums go on, and then the beat goes out. And,
that's,
you know,
it.
And
like,
oh my God, would you sit on that pile of magazines or something? Pull up a book, you know, I don't know.
On the floor, Moroccan style.
And it's amazing what I've got this mad little galley like kitchen at home. And it's amazing what it can churn out on this little mad four-burning electric cooker of mine. It's remarkable what you can churn out, actually.
You live in Hackney, right?
I do live in
very
Hackney.
Very cool, very trendy.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I don't think it was when I first moved there.
Yeah, but, it's all the more trendy for having done that.
No, absolutely.
That's the point.
Yeah. No, the soundtrack at night's quite different. Now you just hear the odd fox wheeling. But when I first moved there, it was just a helicopter going, vroom, 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 and then you'd hear the poof, and I'm like, oh, for God's sake. So give us a break.
So what do we get then when we come round for supper?
Oh, God.
What are you going to cook for the gang?
I'm blessed by two friends in particular who like to come incredibly early for some reason, which is annoying. I can't tell you. Late is one thing. Early, unforgivable.
Yeah, early is
really. Really unforgivable. You know, and so, you know, it's quite, because it's always, I always find it vital to tidy up as best you can before anyone comes. So it's just, you know, just clear the decks as best you can. So it's all going in. So they arrive. So the very good manoeuvre for that is, particularly this time of year, is buy a sack of blood oranges.
Clever.
And get them halved and just say, would you like, can we do anything? Yes, juice these, please. And stand them in a corner and they're really juice and they just turn the place into a massacre. So you have to clean it all down as well. That's always a good manoeuvre. I like that one. And then get a big bucket of ice and a couple of bottles of Campari and a bottle of vodka.
Oh, delicious.
Sorted.
Speaking my language.
No, that buys you about an hour and a half, which is always
cool.
Very important. But if I've got my act together, not very often. But I've inherited my mother's big terracotta marmites from France, which are very beautiful. And so we're layering beef and onions into that to make this amazing
classic
dish of a grillade marinière de Rhône. That's amazing. And I think overnight dishes are great for the home cook that doesn't have much at home.
Yeah.
In terms of space and time, it's brilliant. I'm trying to cook everything from fresh, massive no-no. That's a disaster. The odd risotto, occasionally maybe, if I've made
stressful
a stop.
Stressful for 20 people, though.
Oh, a disaster. You know,
I mean,
and it takes
you're
going to
have to take
cooker.
It in turns.
Like, that's it.
To
this is all you're getting.
Yeah, no, that's true. I feel like for kind of under eight, risotto is all right.
Yeah, and also the other thing that is completely overlooked in this country, which I find remarkable, but we are so obsessed with the hot roast, we forget the beauty of cold meat. And if you roast a joint the night before and let it settle and sit, and you get this amazing, gorgeous jelly that settles in the pan afterwards, and then very thinly sliced, and you make dishes like vitella tonnato or derivatives like porchetta tonnato and dishes like that. And I love doing them. And cured fishes like gravlax and things.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a bit more interesting than a poached salmon, isn't it?
It is, and it's affordable. Because a wild salmon these days is, if you can get one, it's so otherworldly expensive. I mean, I actually can't remember the last time I bought a wild salmon. So we buy the Vaar salmon from the Faroe Islands because that's as near to wild.
Top tip.
And that current vogue of a word, sustainable, of which we are very, you know, because it is shocking what it's done to the seas.
Yeah.
And I get very bothered about fish. So over the road at HQ, we use a lot of herring and mackerel and sardines.
I
and
love Gulf herring.
And I adore those fishes.
Yeah. And roll mops. I love it all.
Oh,
I think it's the Dutch
mops
in me, yeah. Delicious.
You know a thing or two about herrings, the silver darlings. I mean, a very beautiful thing.
I only know how to eat them and that they're good. I don't know much else.
I know. Well, there's that very famous American court. What is it you make? Well, I don't know. Reservations? Well, no. I'm not saying most very good. When you can buy very good things, it's very nice.
That's true. Yeah. So what about pudding? Because I know that you are a pudding fan.
Slightly. Well, I was.
Quo Vadis puddings are the best.
You're very kind.
It is.
Thank
it's,
you.
No one else does cream and ice cream. I think it's just that
and
little
custard.
Bit. Yeah, but it's just. Yeah, it's the triple dairy. It's the triple dairy or the double dairy, isn't it?
Yeah, no, exactly. Well,
whipped
cream
don't
and
do that.
Jersey cream and clotted cream and custard. And
all the cream. And that thing that you did where you did like a mince pie and then it had
meringue.
I mean, it's just extra. So are puddings that extra when you entertain?
Oh, yeah, gild the lily. I'm a great, I think for pudding, because I think most folk are terrified of sugar now, and rightly so. But you've also got to think, well, who pulled the gun? And when you are very health conscious, and I think one of the things that's become very important when writing a menu is that there's a balance there.
Yeah.
And the last thing you want to do, I think those days of Victorians and Edwardians when you just collapsed off your seat and waddled out the room or just rolled out are long gone, and eating 11 courses is horrific. But if you're going to have a pudding, I think food can be as rich as you want it to be, but it must be light. And I think that's the one rule. And we work very hard ensuring that puddings are light, even though it just seems a slab of tart or it's a slice of cake.
Delicious
or something.
Puddings.
You know, but it's it should be cloud-like or, you know, a puff of goodness.
Loving all this. Great vocabulary. So what would you make for those 20 people? Do you do a pudding then? Or do you just mix something from the restaurant?
I think there would be a revolt. It would be a terrible state of affairs if one didn't do a pudding. But for feeding a crowd, a trifle is brilliant.
A trifle or a tiramisu.
Wonderful. And it's a great excuse to go shopping and buying, you know, what on earth would you ever do with a great big glass bowl otherwise?
Do you have a great big glass bowl then?
I've got several great big glass bowls. I like them very much. I've got a born shopper. And my parents were shopping. I'm a victim of, it was terrible abuse actually we suffered as children as we were left in the car outside. As mum and dad went into yet another antique shop to buy another antique and more antiques. And
clearly gave you the eye though.
Thank you very much. There's a lot. So they come that size and then they just grade up all the way to the things like this. They're great.
I'm a massive hoarder. I have to say, I don't have any great big trifle.
I know nothing goes out. I tried selling something once. Couldn't. Interesting.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So even the greatest cooks make mistakes. Chefs, home cooks, everyone.
Yeah, no, yeah.
So I want to know about one of your biggest
mistakes. Well, curiously, one of the things when the generation I grew up in, one of the primary motives was, it wasn't how good you were, it was how good you were at getting out the shit. When it really hit the fan, yeah. And you were like, oh my God, you know, and nothing worked and it all went horribly wrong. And that wasn't me swearing, that was the term used back at the time, but mm-hmm. just to put it in context. And Lord, where to begin? I think the funniest one I think I ever remember was when a chef had got, I didn't do it, of course, but had delegated, of course, you know, because we're all very excellent managers these days. And it was a Mark Hicks dinner we were doing at the Blueprint, and he just bought, I think it was his first book. And we'd started very early on, first days of doing these book club dinner things and collaborating with chefs, blessedly all friends. So Mark said, oh, can I do this tart? Amazing, beautiful. I bought her fantastic. No one does quiche anymore. That would be delicious. And so these tart cases were duly lined with pastry. And for some reason, the chef bolted, panicked, you know. And I came to the kitchen and I thought, there's this terrible smell and these clouds of black smoke coming out of the oven. And each and every tart case had leaked.
Oh my God.
And they leaked into each other, so they just swamped the whole thing. The oven was just awash with custard and it was piling out the doors at either end. And I was like, are you having fun, dear? No, yeah. I said, what? And then, no, this was at half, and it's only 3:30 in the afternoon, so they could sit and know. This is at 6:30.
How many people are you cooking for?
120.
Jeez Louise.
It was a few. So that was a moment.
So what did you do?
Well, of course, we just grabbed a book and read, what else did you do? But it's amazing what cooks do under pressure. And extraordinarily, we had another 8 tart cases in the oven in 30 minutes. And they baked, and you wouldn't have known. But I do remember Mark coming to the kitchen going, hi, oh, see ya.
Brilliant.
He was very, very, very kind and very brilliant and didn't bat an eyelid. I mean, he's amazing that way.
Cool as a cucumber.
I just think he drank a bottle of whiskey, possibly. Yeah. It was a moment.
Possibly not the best thing.
Yeah.
So you've done a bit of television as well.
I have graced the screen on
you
occasion.
Have.
Yeah.
And I need to catch up on that show about eating strange things.
Oh, God, that was unusual to say the least.
So what was the strangest thing that you've eaten?
Oh, Lord. There was a lot that didn't make the final edit. I'm going to say that one. Mm-hmm. And the most fun one was beetle. I loved beetle.
Beetle?
Very much. Beetle.
So how did you eat it?
Well, we were in the really out in the wilds in Namibia. And Namibia was where we were supposed to be confronted with this great, big, huge, dead shot elephant.
Okay.
And Fergus and I were just going, there is no way on heaven or earth we are being confronted in lifetime on with an elephant, let alone for the television. We're not going to grace. It's just wrong on every level. And particularly what would get lost in the thing is there is a culling of elephants in Namibia because it isn't a natural habitat.
Yeah.
They come in from Botswana. It's pretty grim, but it's part of the economy. And so all the meat from the killing is divided up between 12, 15 villages within a radius of where the elephant is shot. And we're like, actually gonna be sick, this is just gross. And then it transpires, who does the shooting? And there are, believe it or not, great white hunters still. You're like,
gosh.
It's just getting worse and worse. And it is congressmen or, it's a very elevated crew of folk. And I went, that's about it. And I believe the term I love best, or it might be Hemingway's one, the nobility of shooting an elephant. It's the same as shooting the side of a barn. You know, how can you miss? You know.
Yeah.
So it was all a bit grim. And amazingly, they muffed up because Channel 4 didn't have the budget to send us for 2 weeks. And when they go shoot training an elephant, it takes 2 weeks. They're really good. They really eke out this story.
Okay.
I mean, you could do it in 5 minutes, and all you do is get the mobile phone and track it. But I mean, let's not, that would be too boring for words. So they went on and on. And so they missed the beginning of the safari, and they ran out of money because they were supposed to send us to South Africa to skin monkeys, which I said, no.
Gosh.
And, you know, it's quite shocking. And we went, wow. So we managed to miss the elephant completely, which is amazing. But along the way, to fill each day, we had it. So porcupine, that turned us green. That was all day digging up porcupines to club them to death in front of us.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, in a way, I think it's important that you kind of, you know, because there's that whole concept of people eating animals but not being
comfortable with seeing them being killed. Exactly so. And it is a part of that life and that culture, which one must respect. And it has no bearing whatsoever at all on a wee laddie running up a hill chasing a haggis that doesn't exist. You know, it's very different. I mean, you know, how you compare the two. So asking these two silly boys to go over and comment on this was absurd. But it was an amazing adventure, that's for sure. But that's why we like beetles so much.
So how do you eat the beetles? Do you fry them?
Well, it was gorgeous. Like these very beautiful black scallops about that size. I mean, they were like jewels, and they were attached to grasses. And these amazing women went out, because women were allowed to go for beetles, the men not.
Had to go for the elephants.
But they caused the beetles. And then the beets in these extraordinary wooden pestles and mortars, the beetles went in with tubers, which were like a cross between a Jerusalem artichoke and a potato sort of thing. Yum. And they just smashed the beetle into this tuber and came up with this extraordinary paste. And they went, you know, you must have something like, wow, okay. I'm going to, wow, this is real pastures new stuff. And it was, and Julie went, you know, going, okay, in for a penny, in for a pound. And it was amazing.
And was it a speciality? Was it, it's the
most extraordinary thing. If I was an athlete, that's all I would want to eat.
Well, if you were an athlete.
Suddenly we were hearing around all over the place, tongue tingling, and our fingers were going. And it was amazing. I'm just absolutely extraordinary. I've never had anything quite like it. Well, want more? You know, best kept secret ever, I think.
Okay, what are a few quick fires then for you? Sticky toffee pudding or profiteroles?
Oh, both.
But you can't have both, I'm afraid.
Oh, what?
You've got
what?
It. This
what kind
is
of
a
restaurant
what?
This is
this? An A or B question.
That's a terrible idea. Golly, I would say sticky toffee in the winter, profiteroles in the summer.
Okay, you're cheating.
Of course.
Oysters or cheese straws as kind of like
oysters.
Aperitif oysters. Always.
Oysters.
I knew you would say oysters actually.
Always.
I was once with you and you ate, I think, definitely a dozen oysters after a very impressive night where I definitely couldn't stomach one.
I'm very partial to an oyster. I do love them.
Steak with chips or in a pie?
Chips.
Steak with chips. Okay,
I
thought you'd be a pie man. I thought
no,
I had that
beef
down.
Pie,
beef
steak
pie,
pie,
steak
beef
and
pie,
chips.
Beef pie, steak and chips.
Okay.
Definitely. Or suet and steak and kidney pudding.
Yeah, okay.
Marvellous. Yeah, even better.
Okay, even better. Okay. And what about like key ingredients? What three ingredients do you advise people to always have in the cupboard?
Oh, lemon, salt and olive oil.
That was very quick. Lemon, salt and olive oil. Okay.
Vital. If you got those three, you can do anything.
Olive oil, particularly from anywhere. Italy, Spain, Greece.
I think Provence. Where did that come from? Provence down through Italy.
Provence
definitely.
Down through Italy. They do a good olive
oil. Yeah, very, very fine oils.
Okay, and then last question. If you could have any three people to your ultimate dinner party, alive, dead, fictional, who would you have and why would you have them?
Oh my goodness. Well, you, of course, my dear.
Well, thanks.
You're vital.
I definitely want to come.
You know, absolutely, give it.
I'll squeeze blood oranges.
I know. Golly, what a question. There's quite a cast for that one. But I would say my two favourite, Fergus Henderson.
Yeah.
And Simon Hopkinson, but they're men. So you definitely have to come.
Yeah.
But that's only one woman.
You can give you a few more
so,
if you want.
can have a few more.
Yeah, you can have a few more. People, lots of people have a few more.
Can
do five.
Can do five.
Yeah, I mean, you have 20 for supper. Most people have six. So that instantly gives you more.
I know. So let's see. If I had one current, I'd love Rachel Roddy to come.
Yeah,
she's amazing.
Brilliant.
I think she's terrific and very, very splendid. And then if I was going to put my foot in the past, Eliza Acton.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, fun.
Amazing woman. Extraordinary woman and amazing writer.
And you do your classic blood orange Campari.
Absolutely.
Layered potato thing.
Get them very
and something
drunk
fantastic
very quickly. So comment
pudding.
Just didn't, you know, would be abated very, very quickly. Then it would just have a very
be
nice
a great
time.
Evening. Well, thank you so much. And I'm going to finish on a quote from Elizabeth David, who I know that you're a fan. There are people who take the heart out of you, and there are people who put it back in. And you, Jeremy Lee, are certainly the latter. So thank you for that. And thank you to everyone for coming.
Thank you. Well, thank you for having me. Thank you, dear audience.
I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you liked it, rate it, review it, talk about it, share it, and invite your friends round for supper. This has been a Studio 71 production. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next week.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.